Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Firebird by Bruce Diamondback. Keeping well costs low, a key for corporation. Observing its 10th anniversary as a publicly traded company, Diamondback Energy had a successful third quarter, and it looks forward to capitalizing on its purchase of the Fort Worth Firebase Firebird Energy Company. That's according to Chairman and CEO Travis Stice and President CFO Kees Van Hoff, who said inflation remains a challenge. Our commitment to being the lowest cost operator in the Permian Basin has been and will continue to position us for success, Stice said in his company's recent third-quarter earnings call. In the quarter, we produced over 224,000 barrels of oil per day and generated $1.7 billion in operating cash flow, leading to free cash flow of $1.2 billion. Stice said Diamondback has been thereby able to return at least 75% of its free cash flow to shareholders. In October, we announced the pending acquisition of the assets of Firebird Energy, a company with a large contiguous position in the Midland Basin. He said, in reference to the sedimentary basin from which oil and natural gas are pumped primarily in Martin, Midland, Upton, Howard, Glasscock, and Regan counties. Firebird has the right balance of cash flow and inventory, and the acquisition is immediately accretive on all relative pre-share financial metrics while providing a long runway of high-quality drilling opportunities. With over 350 locations, we expect to have well over a decade of run room. In conjunction with the acquisition, Stice reported Diamondback will sell $500 million of its non-core assets by the end of next year, with the net proceeds being used to pay down debt. We have closed on a $155 million sale of non-core assets in the Delaware Basin, jumpstarting our program and ensuring continuous improvement to our investment-grade balance sheet, he said. We'll continue to pursue strategic divestitures, including the sale of certain assets within our Rattler midstream portfolio, generating unrealized value for our shareholders. We have some of the best inventory in the United States with our low-cost operational machine in place, and we have the unique ability to generate significant, repeatable returns through the drill bit for decades to come. Stice said from Midland that Diamondback is working with its service providers to ensure very efficient, cost-effective personnel and equipment. It's not easy to operate in this environment, but our size, scale, and quality of inventory uniquely position us to deliver differentiated results and create meaningful value for our shareholders, he said. We've just celebrated 10 years as a public company, growing from a $500 million market cap to almost $30 billion today. The Delaware Basin lies under far west Texas and southeastern New Mexico. Van Hoff said the low cost of his company's wells are a decided advantage. I think we're going to keep co-developing, Van Hoff said. In some ways, we'll end up doing larger pads, given the sale of the Robertson Ranch area that is kicking off in a real way right now. Well costs are certainly the biggest advantage we have as a company, and that's a cultural thing from top to bottom. We're very focused on keeping costs down in this inflationary environment. Coalition goal to help Permian Basin's residents. On November the 16th, the Midland Chamber of Commerce will hold its annual State of Education Lunch. The topic is literacy in the Permian Basin. Please come and learn about the issue and what can you do in your sphere of influence to improve our condition. The Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin is working on behalf of our community to increase awareness of our regional literacy deficits and address those needs by building the capacity of local nonprofits and other institutions serving low-literate individuals. We do that through subgranting, collaborations, training opportunities, and advocacy. A recent survey by the American Institutes of Research quantified the literacy deficits of Midland County. The study reveals that over one-third of the adults in the Permian Basin read at or below a third-grade level. In some counties in our area, that number climbs to 50%. According to the same study, this deficit can slow economic growth, overall earnings, and related business activity. Estimates show that the total economic cost to Texas of the shortfall in adults with level 3 literacy in 2020 includes $16.4 billion in annual gross product and over 186,000 jobs. Without intervention, these losses are projected to rise to $67.5 billion in annual gross product and about 766,000 jobs by 2050. The Texas Association of Workforce Boards has concluded that Texas faces a crisis in education, and unless changes are quickly made, by 2040, Texas will experience a weakened economy with the undereducated workforce that will be less attractive to businesses, decreasing tax base to fund state and local government services, and declining revenues to build and maintain infrastructure. The Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board projects that by 2040, the Texas labor force will need 60% of all 25 to 34-year-olds, almost 2 million people, to hold industry-recognized certificates and college degrees. Only around 35% of this group currently has those qualifications. It's predicted that technology will replace around 20% of workers with the lowest literacy. For every dollar spent on adult illiteracy, society reaps $7.14 in returns, whether through increased revenues or decreased expenditures. Now that you know, join us on November 16th and learn what you can do to help. Mark Palmer is Chief Executive Officer at Abel Hanger Foundation. Death notices. Randy Dean Chandler, 68, of Andrews, died Saturday, November the 12th. Francis Gunn, 99, died Sunday, November the 13th. Manuel Porras Escantrias, 74, died Saturday, November the 12th. Patricia Charlene Slaughter, 81, of Fredericksburg, died November the 9th. Ramona Sellers, age 43, died November the 8th. Jimmy Nell Oschlanger passed away on November the 11th. Uvalde police chief told kids were alive in school. A police commander at the scene of the Uvalde massacre was informed that children were alive in a classroom with the gunman more than 30 minutes before officers breached the room and ended one of the deadliest school shootings in U.S. history. A dispatcher can be heard on audio recordings obtained by CNN telling the acting city police chief that 8 to 9 kids were alive and in need of help in the classroom. The call came as hundreds of officers gathered in and around Robb Elementary School, where 19 students and 2 teachers were killed. The dispatcher spoke with Lieutenant Mariano Pargas minutes after a 10-year-old girl dialed 911 from inside the adjoining rooms where the gunman had holed up. The call underscores that members of law enforcement were aware there were children in danger even as they waited more than 70 minutes to confront the gunman. It highlights the actions of another police commander in the hesitant and haphazard response that prompted the firing of school's police chief, Pete Arredondo. The city of Uvalde placed Pargas on administrative leave in July following a damning report from lawmakers on the response to the shooting. He told CNN that his lawyer instructed him not to speak publicly, but there's a lot of stuff that I can explain that I would love to defend myself. Life sentence sought for teen in Michigan school shooting. Prosecutors said they'll seek a life sentence with no chance for parole for a 16-year-old boy who killed 4 fellow students at a Michigan school and pleaded guilty to murder and terrorism. They disclosed their plans in a court filing Monday, 3 weeks after Ethan Crumbly, 16, withdrew a possible insanity defense and acknowledged the shooting at Oxford High School in November of 2021. A first-degree murder conviction typically brings an automatic no-parole sentence in Michigan, but teenagers are entitled to a hearing where their lawyer can raise immaturity, mental condition, family life, and other issues while arguing for a shorter term. Crumbly pleaded guilty to all 24 charges. The sentencing process is scheduled to start in February. A sentence of imprisonment for life without the possibility of parole is appropriate in this case, Oakland County Assistant Prosecutor Mark Keast wrote. Separately, the prosecutor's office said Tuesday that Crumbly was offered and promised nothing for his guilty plea. Judge Roan will have flexibility. Under state law, possible prison terms for teens include parole eligibility after a minimum sentence of 25 years. Texas sends next busload of migrants to Philadelphia. Governor Greg Abbott said Tuesday that Philadelphia will be the next destination for migrants. The state is transporting from the U.S.-Mexico border by the thousands to Democratic-led locales, putting a new bus on the road a week after the Republican easily won re-election. He did not say how many migrants were on board or whether more than one busload was sent, but in shift, Abbott said a first bus was due to arrive Wednesday, publicly offering some advance notice of an arrival following criticism over buses that suddenly turned up in New York, Washington, D.C., and Chicago. Texas has transported more than 13,000 migrants to those cities since April. Abbott has sent the buses to Democratic-led cities as a way to maximize exposure over what he says is inaction by the Biden administration over high numbers of migrants crossing on the southern border. Critics have waved off the buses as a political stunt, but voters rewarded Abbott last week with a record-tying third term as Texas governor in his race against Democrat Beto O'Rourke. Abbott made a series of hardline immigration measures the centerpiece of his campaign. Nearly 6 in 10 voters favored Abbott's decision to send migrants to northern cities, according to AP VoteCast, an expansive survey of almost 3,400 voters. In a statement announcing the bus trips to Philadelphia, Abbott's office said Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney has long celebrated and fought for sanctuary city status, making the city an ideal addition to Texas's list of drop-off locations. Kenney said he would greet the arrivals with dignity and respect. It is truly disgusting to hear today that Governor Abbott and his administration continue to implement their purposefully cruel policy using immigrant families, including women and children, as pawns to shamelessly push his warped political agenda, he said in a statement. Kenney said that the city had been working with more than a dozen local organizations to provide the migrants with shelter space, emergency health screening, food, water, language interpretation, and more. World population hits 8 billion, creating many challenges. The world's population likely hit an estimated 8 billion people on Tuesday, according to a United Nations projection, with much of the growth coming from developing nations in Africa. Among them is Nigeria, where resources are already stretched to the limit. More than 15 million people in Lagos compete for everything from electricity to light their homes to spots on crowded buses, often for two-hour commutes each way in this sprawling megacity. Some Nigerian children set off for school as early as 5 a.m. And over the next 3 decades, the West African nation's population is expected to soar even more, from 216 million this year to 375 million, the UN says. That will put Nigeria in a tie for third place with the United States after India and China. We are already overstretching what we have, the housing, roads, the hospitals, schools, everything is overstretched, said Guyan Dalup, the urban planning and development consultant in Nigeria. The UN's Day of 8 Billion milestone on Tuesday is more symbolic than precise, officials are careful to note in a wide-ranging report released over the summer that makes some staggering projections. the upward trend threatens to leave even more people in developing countries further behind as governments struggle to provide enough classrooms and jobs for a rapidly growing number of youth, and food insecurity becomes an even more urgent problem. Nigeria is among 8 countries the UN says will account for more than half the world's population growth between now and 2050, along with fellow African nations Congo, Ethiopia, and Tanzania. The population in many countries in sub-Saharan Africa is projected to double between 2022 and 2050, putting additional pressure on already strained resources and challenging policies aimed to reduce poverty and inequalities, the UN report said. It projected the world's population will reach around 8.5 billion in 2030, 9.7 billion in 2050, and 10.4 billion in 2100. Other countries rounding out the list with the fastest growing populations are Egypt, Pakistan, the Philippines, and India, which is set to overtake China as the world's most populous nation next year. In Congo's capital, Kinshasa, where more than 12 million people live, many families struggle to find affordable housing and pay school fees. While elementary pupils attend for free, older children's chances depend on their parents' incomes. "My children took turns going to school," said Luck Kongu, a Kinshasa truck driver who has 6 children. 2 studied while others waited because of money. "If I didn't have so many children, they would have finished their studies on time." Rapid population growth also means more people vying for scarce water resources and leaves more families facing hunger as climate change increasingly impacts crop production in many parts of the world. There is a greater pressure on the environment, increasing the challenges to food security that is also compounded by climate change, said Dr. Reddy, president of the Public Health Foundation of India. "Reducing inequality while focusing on adapting and mitigating climate change should be where our policymakers' focus should be." Still, experts say the bigger threat to the environment is consumption, which is highest in developed countries not undergoing big population increases.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm recording the education articles for Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, November 15th, 2022. Early College High School celebrates Blue Ribbon Honor. Early College High School at Midland College held a ceremony last week celebrating its selection as a National Blue Ribbon School. Speakers included Midland College President Steve Thomas and Acting Superintendent Kelly Spencer. ECHS is the first Midland ISD campus to receive this honor. As previously reported, this distinction from the U.S. Department of Education marks the school as a model of effective school practices for state and district educators and other schools throughout the U.S., according to a press release. Also honored with the Blue Ribbon Schools Program honor was Garden City Elementary School in Garden City. The Education Department recognizes all schools in one of 2 performance categories based on all student scores, subgroup student scores, and graduation rates. Exemplary high-performing schools are among their state's highest-performing schools as measured by state assessments or nationally normal tests. Exemplary achievement gap-closing schools are among their state's highest-performing schools in closing achievement gaps between a school's student groups and all students. Early College High School and Garden City Elementary School were picked as exemplary high-performing schools. Midland High first-year teacher seeks funding for classroom library, by Ben Schaefer. Ms. Henshaw, a first-year teacher at Midland High, is asking for funding to build a classroom library for her students. Henshaw teaches students in grades 9 through 12. The project expires on March 10th. There's $1,026 still needed to fully fund it. The materials will reach 110 students. Henshaw claims she is starting to build her new classroom from the ground up and wanted to implement quality reading materials. "My classroom seems to look a little bare without being filled with books. The students I have are great, and I want to encourage their learning in any way that I can." Donate online donors at choose.org/project/newclassroomlibrary/700-3319. Engineering Academy, part of a statewide program. A commentary by John Sharp. Becoming an engineer isn't easy. It takes intelligence, hard work, and grit. But it doesn't have to be unaffordable. We've proven that at Texas A&M University through the success of our Engineering Academy program, which allows kids who have the intelligence and drive to become an engineer, even if they can't afford to leave home and get a dorm room at College Station after high school. More than 2,300 kids from Austin, Brenham, Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston, Midland, San Antonio, and Bryan College Station have taken advantage and enrolled in the Academy program since its launch in 2015. And they're saving a ton of money in the process. Getting this done wasn't rocket science, and we think the success of this program can be replicated. Here's how it works. We send top-notch engineering professors from A&M to community colleges where students take their first 2 years of basic courses before transferring to the College of Engineering at Texas A&M and College Station to finish up. We have plans to expand this opportunity to other partner institutions soon, broadening the reach of this ambitious effort. One of our partners is Midland College, where classes are supported by Concho. Most of these kids stay at home with the support of their families. That saves them tens of thousands of dollars in expenses. The statistics on the kids who have taken advantage of this program are encouraging. 33% of them are the first generation in their family to earn a degree. 19% are female, and 40% are Hispanic. Of course, we were roundly criticized when we started this. They said, "Oh my God, you're going to flood the market with engineers. None of these kids are going to get jobs. You're going to get inferior students." None of that has proven to be true. In fact, they've done great. The cumulative grade point average is 3.2 for the 256 students who have earned their Texas A&M engineering degrees via our academies, and is in good in academies is good and sometimes higher than that is of our traditional engineering students. A whopping 81% of our Engineering Academy students remain in the program 3 years after taking their first class. They're not washing out, and upon graduation, they get high-paying jobs. That's because earning an engineering degree from A&M can be a ticket to a better life. It's one of our best degrees, and our students who earn one get hired right out of school. That's no surprise. The need for talented engineers is constantly growing. Just look out the window and you can see why. Everything you see was either made by God or by an engineer. And thanks to the success of our A&M Engineering Academy at Midland College, more things will be made by an Aggie engineer.
Understanding Eggs and Vitamin D Levels with Dr. Roach. Dear Dr. Roach, every 4 months, my blood test at my doctor's office has reported a low vitamin D level. However, I have been eating 4 eggs a week, and eggs are supposed to be a good source of vitamin D. I can't tolerate the vitamin D supplement. I don't understand why my vitamin D level isn't better with the eggs. The answer is, the amount of vitamin D in an egg is about 1.1 mcg. Since the minimum recommended intake for adults is 600 IU, 800 for older adults, and even more in people with low bone mass or osteoporosis, you would need an unhealthy amount of eggs to get all your vitamin D. Most people get vitamin D from sun exposure. Your skin will make plenty of vitamin D with effective sun exposure. People without effective sun exposure will usually need supplementation, since it is very difficult to get adequate vitamin D through diet.
This is the Dear Abby column. Husband feels powerless amid marriage struggles. Dear Abby, I married for the second time 2 years ago to a younger woman. 7 months after our wedding, she announced she didn't like my dominating personality, which is why she was stepping out of the marriage. She then went back to her deadbeat ex-boyfriend for 6 months. I went for counseling and have made a major change in how I treat, talk, and make decisions with her. I love my wife with all my heart. I want to protect our marriage and move forward from the affair. Our second anniversary is approaching, but she has been interacting with other men. She takes her daughter with another man on play dates, along with his daughter, and goes to the park with another man for 3 hours. He was a single dad having a barbecue. The third one is a guy she goes with to the park, splash pads, public swimming pool, and a water slide park. They text each other often. One guy is a married stay-at-home dad. He has cheated on his wife before. Am I wrong to think this is unacceptable for a married woman? Any advice would be appreciated. Signed, Bewildered in Canada. Dear Bewildered, it's time for joint counseling, with a new therapist for you and your wife. I can't think of a better way to drive her away than continuing to obsess about what she may be doing on these outings. It is hard to envision her flagrantly carrying on with a child in tow. The activities you describe seem distinctly family-oriented to me. It appears you still expect her to conform to your idea of how a married woman should behave, or you're having serious trust issues. More counseling for you may be in order if your marriage is going to last. Dear Abby, I've been with my boyfriend for 4 years. Over those years, he has acquired an addiction to porn. He refuses to admit he is addicted and insists that it's perfectly normal. I'm not usually one to judge, but it has reached the point that it's affecting our sex life. I can't remember the last time we had a moment to ourselves that didn't start with him spending all day watching porn. I tried getting involved with it myself, hoping we'd find a common interest we could bond over, but he doesn't seem to want me involved at all. I feel like I'm being cheated on, as silly as that sounds. I'm struggling with my body image because of this. I feel like I'm never going to be adequate enough for him to focus on our sex life. How do I compete with porn? Signed, Shut Out in Virginia. Dear Shut Out, you don't. Tell your boyfriend that his reliance on porn is negatively affecting your self-esteem and you are no longer willing to be involved with him because of it. If he's in love with you and willing to work on the problem, there are resources available to him. 12-step programs come immediately to mind. If he isn't, however, accept that this has nothing to do with your level of attractiveness and move on. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.